Okay, service please. Hi, my name is Bobby, I'm a compulsive over here. I am the leader for this workshop. The delusion that I am like other people has to be smashed. Okay, and so that's the workshop you're supposed to be in, then you're in the right one. If not, anyway, so, and at the end of this meeting, anybody in gray chairs or would be asked to bring them over to the other conference room and make sure they're set up in rows with the entrance door to your left as you're seated for the entertainment show. Okay. And we have a battery operated timer. Your batteries are And Ann has been so gracious to, so please look her way as you're sharing so we can keep it to the 3 minutes so everybody has a chance to share.
Everybody talk to Ann.
Yes. Everybody look at Ann when you're talking. Any of that. But, and this is a share of positive and speak only for themselves saying I and me instead of you and we, and then start the sharing with the person to you. I will start to the person to my right, and we'll go around to where you're last, and we'll just hold it up in your face. But anyway, so, again, I'm Bobby, a grateful compulsive overeater, and I guess I'm supposed to share about what I was and what I became and what I am now. Yes, please. Use my credit card. This is what I looked like back in 98. And there, through the grace of God, I've been relieved of over, I used to be over 500 pounds, and an insulin-taking diabetic, and no longer need to take insulin or pills or anything in my... Blood sugars are normal, and I'm anything but normal. The only normal person I am is that I'm a normal compulsive overeater. So the delusion, well, I'll get to that anyway. So anyway, so I was raised in an Italian home, and much like many of the homes of other compulsive overeaters, food was a reward as well as a punishment. And I remember my little Sicilian grandmother, you know, saying, Bobby, your pants keep ripping, and you know, I got to keep fixing them, but I made a special little dessert for you later on, you know. So I always got mixed signals, and I always blamed everybody for my problems. And that's what my whole youth was about. I was very angry. My dad left when I was 7. And I was raised by women, which I was blessed with, but at the time I didn't think so. And I was pretty normal size until I was about 13, and then started to slowly go up. I was in high school. I was, you know, involved in football, wrestling, and track, and so that's how I kept the weight off. And then I fell, in college, I fell off a scaffold 30 feet and ripped out my left ankle. So that ended any sports for pretty much the rest of my life. And so, you know, weight got even further. But I was always good at losing weight. I could drop 75 pounds very quickly, but I could put it on even quicker, and then some, and that's what happened. And you know, kept losing weight and putting it back on till eventually it got harder, and to the point where I didn't want to do it anymore. I just wanted to keep eating, so I just kept eating. and kept beating myself up and saying I was no good and yada, 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 as far as the self-abuse mode. Then I came in the program. I had a little therapist, the only therapist I ever saw, Sid, a little Jewish woman, about 4'9", about 80 pounds. And every time I used to say that story in front of her, she punched me in the belly. I'm 5 foot and I'm 100 pounds, you know. And she was a tough little bird, God rest her soul. And she said, Bobby, you're a food addict and it's not your fault. When you eat sugar and flour products, it goes to your head and the cravings don't stop. And it was so very true. And I went to a treatment center for food addiction, learned how to weigh and measure my food, how to shop and look at labels, and been in recovery for almost, in July, it'll be 11 years. So I'm very, very grateful to be a compulsive overeater. As far as the delusion that I am like other people, I am not like other people, but I had that illusion of trying to be like a person who could leave a piece of dessert on the plate. Well, not only couldn't I do that, but I take whatever was left off of their plate as well, you know, because, you know, people are starving in Africa, I can't let it waste, you know. So, never went into garbage pails and stuff like that, but thank God. But I was like this delusion that I only had one thing. I remember going to one of those fast food stores, usually on the way to going to someone else who was feeding me dinner. So I would stop at one or two places on the way. And I remember eating whatever it was, and I'd always have diet soda. And, because I would, you know, and what I would do is all the food wrappings and whatnot, once the soda was done, I'd throw the ice out and put everything into that. So when it was in my car, it only looked like I just had soda. Of course, I didn't eat anything. I just had soda. And I remember I would do that constantly, hide things in the things. I remember like eating the frozen treats out of the freezer on a stick. And I would, usually when I sat down to watch TV, I would grab 4 or 5. So I'd eat one, put it in the wrapper, open another wrapper and put that in to the point where I couldn't put any more wrappers into the, you know. So then, you know, but it looked like I only had one of those treats. You know, that delusion that I am like other people. And no, I was not. I could not leave anything on my plate. I could not leave, no. If it was on my plate, I would eat it. And if it was sitting on the kitchen drain board, I would eat it. So that's the only time I would help bring, you know, things in to the kitchen, you know, if we were eating in the dining room. But so I am not like other normal people who can leave things. I am a food addict that needs to weigh and measure my food, to abstain from eating flour and sugar products, and that's what works for me. Because if I don't use the scale, my head tells me, well, you know, if I'm really hungry, you know, half a side of beef looks like 4 ounces. You know. But if I'm not that hungry, you know, an ounce could look like 4 ounces. So I know I need to weigh and measure, because if I don't, then I'm mentally screwing with my head. And I'd rather have the freedom, and that's what works for me. Everybody else, you know, I can't judge, because judge lest ye be judged. And, you know, that's what this program has taught me. I got, you know, mind my own business and, you know, keep my own side of the street clean, and what other people do is their problem. And that has been a hard lesson learned, but one I have learned well. 1 minute left. Oh, my goodness. So, so I have learned to live life on life's terms and be grateful to that God has shown me a love that I'm able to learn. I learned how to love myself, and now I can love others, because a love built on a faulty foundation is not love. If I can't love myself, how can I love anyone else? So, thank you for letting me share, and we have 3 minutes, and our lovely timekeeper over there will, as you just saw, put your face with it. And we'll start over here on my right. So, positive pitches, and 3 minutes, and keep your eye on, and please, the minute word.
I'm Gail, grateful compulsive over here. This is an interesting topic. The decision, like other people, that I could be smashed. Well, in one area of my life, I never had the delusion like I was other people. I never felt like I was other people. I never felt good enough to be like other people. So I always wanted to be like other people. I wasn't smart enough, I wasn't pretty enough, I wasn't creative enough, I wasn't successful enough. I just wasn't enough. I didn't measure up. You know, and probably how I knew that was by the time I was 4 or 5 years old and didn't get picked for the kickball team or whatever, you know, or whatever messages I was getting. And as I grew into teenagehood, that was kind of my theme song. So I was always trying to be like other people, and never felt that I was. But when it came to food, I actually had a delusion that I was like other people. I thought that I was like other people and that I just had less control than they did. But that I could diet my way to, or deprive my way to, or exercise my way to being just like them. And that was true in my 20s, in my 30s, and even up to my 40s. But as I found out, this disease is progressive. And I remember my father died in 1991, and, you know, people bring things to the house, mostly like infections. And I started eating, and I didn't wake up for a year. And that's really where I got the delusion was smashed. Because it was really clear to me that nobody else was doing that. And that's when I began the behaviors of hiding and sneaking and lying and all that stuff about food. So the delusion was over. And so I just made up really good things, like I'm different than everybody else. I've got hypoglycemia, I need to eat every 15 minutes, whatever. It's harder for me. Over gave me the list of why women can't lose weight, you know, yada, 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 yada. And then I came into this program and found out that that I'm exactly like you. And thank God for that. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing. Hi, I'm Ellen, a compulsive overeater. Hi, Ellen. Hi. Yes, what Gil just ended with is kind of where I am with this topic, because I am just like you, so I am like other people, but not other people on the outside, perhaps, of these rooms. I always wanted to be like other people, and in appearance, sometimes I appear like other people, you know, people that I feel are at a normal weight, other times I didn't. But I learned a long time ago that I can't compare my insides to their outsides. I don't know how people are feeling. I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what's their motivation for anything. All I can see is what they show on the outside. And most people have no clue, other than either program people or close friends, of what's going on the inside with me. I just the other day had to do something at work. I was elected to a position that's unusual for me, you know, and I had to do a meeting with a lot of my peers, and I may be a teacher and stand in front of kids all day long, but I don't like to talk in front of adults, you know, especially my peers, and I get very uncomfortable, and they applauded when I was finished, and I didn't give a speech, I just ran a meeting, and the next day, several people came up to me and said, that was wonderful, and I said, I just wanted to, like, throw up, and like, what? So it showed me that they don't know what's going on my insides, you know, they had no idea how nervous I was, how frustrated, you know, how the anxiety that I had over doing that, and that just reinforced for me that I can't tell what's going on with other people either. You know, the only way I can get to know people is to share with them, either in meetings or one-on-one, to really get to know what's going on with people. I always wanted to appear normal, but whether my weight was super high or normal, I still had whatever's going on with my food addiction and my compulsive overeating in my head. You know, sometimes there was more of a compulsion than others, but the appearance of, you know, I was a size 4 for a while, I was a size 6, I never knew they made single-digit clothes, because I was a 24. So for me, I may have appeared normal to other people, but it didn't change the fact that I was a compulsive overeater and I needed to weigh and measure my food and I needed to eat what I needed to eat, you know. And I would get into that trap of people, normal people, quote, whatever that is, saying, oh, but you know, you look fine, you could have such and such. And I had to make sure that I knew that I couldn't, you know. And sometimes my disease would get to me and I'd start thinking like that, like, maybe they're right. No. No, that's the insanity of it. So for me, I have to know that I'm different when it comes to food, and that's okay. You know, that's okay for today. Thank you.
Next question. Hi, I'm Susan. I'm also an overeater. Hi, Susan. I've been dieting since I was 10. And so the problem with that is that through sheer willpower at times, I appear to be a normal eater. And what that lured me into was thinking that I was, that I could be like other people. And, you know, because I could be sometimes. And what I didn't understand was why I couldn't be all the time, you know. And all the times that I walk with a friend several days a week, and I tell her, I don't know what it was. I just started last night, and I just didn't stop till bedtime. And what is it that causes that? And why sometimes can I be so on and so eating what I'm supposed to, and then other times I just can't seem to? And so those periods of time when I would be on and just doing what I was supposed to do and eating healthy and not having a problem with it actually kind of added to the delusion that I was like normal people. When I came into this program, I really started to realize that there's a you know, statement frequently made about, you know, we sometimes think we have no willpower, but we'll discover that we really had a lot. And I realized that through sheer willpower, there were times when I could eat the way I ought to. And so that actually made it, did kind of disguised the problem in terms of the compulsive overeating. But I have, on two occasions since I started in August, thought, I can handle a little. And my friend says, oh, my nutritionist said just have a little bit. Well, I've tried that twice. And I pray that I don't get tempted to do it again, or tempted beyond being able to resist. Because I know, you know, said twice and it's been ugly. So I just need to accept. And acceptance of reality is what I'm working on. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
And I've never felt like I fit in anywhere growing up. And yet I connected with my girlfriend Jeannie. We stayed in touch. We've known each other since we were 5 and 6 years old. Sometimes, well, I was raised in a Jewish neighborhood in the Bronx, and now I'm Puerto Rican, Protestant, and English. I call myself a WASP, or white, Anglo-Saxon, Puerto Rican, Protestant. And here I am raised in a Jewish neighborhood in the Bronx. And a lot of my, you know, even today, you know, I mean, I embrace my Jewish friends. But Jeannie and I, she was a little Presbyterian, I was a little Lutheran. And then my father moves us at the age of 10 to Staten Island, which is primarily Italian, Roman Catholic, and Irish. So I never really, and my home life was so chaotic. And my mother had my disease. And it was, I never knew what I came home to or what the house would be like. My father's a workaholic, or, you know, on and on, and we'll follow up. But, and I look back, and I, because of where I am, all the years of program and all recovery of that experience, I have now learned to embrace my uniqueness. And I will never eat like other people. I always say, am I lean, I have brown eyes, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I have exactly what Barbara's t-shirt says. I no longer, I cease to fight everything and everybody. I embrace this. You know, there's other things that could have happened a lot worse than this. Even though this disease has taken me places, I don't wish on my worst enemies. I felt like I was in a pit and I couldn't get out. And the eating was so progressive. When I first walked in the rooms in 1976, I was sent also by a psychiatrist to see. She was so cute. She said, my dear, she said, I would never treat an alcoholic without having to go to AA. I want you to go to OA. And I didn't know, 1976, I didn't know what OA was. But out of desperation, I went. I was a Red Watch again lecturer that was gaining back weight. I had 15 pounds maybe to lose. But I had lost 82 when I was on my way back up. But I did. I took the scenic route for a long, lot of years. And, you know, by God's grace, I hung in there. And I'm so grateful. I walked in 8 years ago at 302 pounds. That's how progressive this disease is. To a positive shared eating. And I know I'm not delusional. I'm just special. I'm not like everybody else. And I have all of you to reflect that back at me, which I love. You know, I'm not doing this alone. It is a weak program. I can't do this alone. But I have people that understand something that I don't, like I don't, I don't get it, yet I got it. You know, I will explain it to somebody else. But I'm grateful for this. There are solutions and there's recovery. And again, I embrace my uniqueness and I embrace my relationship with you and God and so much better. So much better. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing. Karen, you're also a reader. And the delusion that I was like others had to be smashed. Well, that's true. I mean, on the food end, definitely. I've tried every experiment to look normal. I've, you know, told myself I can have that little extra bite or on a certain occasion where I can eat more just to look like every, you know, the whole thing. Well, I'll have that even though it's not the abstinent thing to do, but, you know, these little experiments. And I can't tell you how many times I've done it, and never once was I able to stop binging afterwards. Never, never once. So I know I'm not like others when it comes to food, especially when I watch the behaviors of the people that I live with. They're both normal weight. My daughter's a little thin, but she's always been that way. And they will leave things on their plates. They will take a bite of something. And that is the thing that we just, like he was saying about, you know, if it was on the drain board. Well, you know, if it was in the garbage can, I would sneak back and you know, try to eat this stuff. I mean, it's terrible behavior when I think about it. It's sneaky, manipulative, weird. I don't even know what to say. It's certainly normal people. Normal eaters would never in a million years go in a garbage can or on the floor and they look for things that are there that they shouldn't be picking up and eating. But so that used to, just that feeling of uncomfortability when I would stand on somebody's plate, it just drive me crazy. Only one bite. What do you mean only one bite? So that type of thing. But also behavior-wise. You know, it says something, I think it's in the big book about, you know, when the little tiny thing happens that isn't right, or the tire, you know, the tire, you know, whatever, you know, we freak out, you gotta call 911. Normal people don't do that. I mean, I've seen normal, well, I think they're normal people, they react to stress so differently than I do. I see it at work, when things are stressful, there's a lot to do. These people just say, well, okay, well, you know, and you never see the stress on them. It's like they just do what they have to do. And I'm like, you know, and it's just my reaction. I think I will always have to work on that. But it's gotten better, sure. But it's me. I mean, I'm not normal in that respect. My family, they'll be late going somewhere or something's missing and they're trying to run out the door. And my daughter will say to my husband, well, Dad, do you know where that is or something? And I'm like, come on, we have to hurry. It's like, oh, it's all wrecked already, you know? And it's not. I mean, you're calm about these things. I'm not like that at all. And I find that, like, so interesting. It's like I'm not a bad person. It's just that, I guess, other people in the world don't react the same way I do. That's why I need this program, because I'm in my head. I'm nuts. If I wouldn't have this program, it would be no hope for me at all. So that's all I have.
Thank you.
I'm sure you do.
I'm Lori, and I'm compulsive, and I am coming out of denial that I never felt like I fit in, no matter where we went. I could put on a mask, and I could look like I was blending in, and people would think, you know. For all appearances, I looked like I fit in. But but I felt crazy inside, and I put myself into a mental health unit after many years. I was about 40, and I didn't know whether I was suicidal or homicidal. I just was really, I had hit bottom, and I didn't know what to do about it. And it wasn't the doctors that helped me. It was my roommate, Needed Sleep. And she says, you know, it's not my place to tell you what you need. But she says, because God knows I'm here too. And she was so honest. And the mental health unit had a library. And she brought me out recovery literature. And I sat by the nurse's station that night, and I read it, and I cried cathartically. But it was me. By the morning, I had my diagnosis. The doctor in charge of the unit was like, I don't believe in that crap. But I knew what was wrong. I finally, for the first time in my life, I knew what was, I mean, I was 40, and I was like, I had a new beginning. I'm still struggling with this disease. I'm still trying to learn answers. But I'm so grateful that I had the courage to put myself in a unit, because, you know, to put myself away. And I'm so grateful that God placed, you know, what I needed at that time in my hands, you know, because I would have either gone to jail or gone to a grave. And with the way that I speak, I just did not ever belong. And it's still, to this day, I'm so grateful when I come to a conference. I'm so thankful when I hear people share, because this is where I belong. I can hear like a bobblehead, Tom. And I can relate to so many people. It's amazing. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for sharing. Hello, my name is Anonymous. I'm here. This whole thing of being like other people, it took me a long time to smash that one, because someone shared it hit the nail on the head for me, because those times, there were short periods of time where I really was kind of like a normal person, ate like a normal person, usually within the structure of some sort of a diet or something. And when I was there, I knew I could never go back to that terrible kind of eating again. And of course, when I'm eating, I think I could never go back to eating normally again. But without a doubt, there's someone else shared that 100% of the time when she's tried it, it's turned into a binge, and I can attest to that too. Not like other people did that. And then also, I just think the Big Book is so incredible how it tells my story. The thing, that example of when I have a flat tire, or someone else has a flat tire, they'll call AAA, but I have to call the suicide hotline. I mean, it just is completely, did I not get the memo, or am I wired differently? All I know is that I have really grown in compassion for myself, that I am not like a lot of other people, I'm a lot like you. And if it weren't for being able to relate to others who nod and go, yes, 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 I would be lost. I would be completely lost. So I'm grateful to be here, especially talking about this topic. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you, Sharon.
Hi, my name is Lila. I'm a compulsive eater. And I grew up thin, and my sister had the weight problem. And she was the one who had stuff hidden, and she was the bad one. and I was the good one. And I really relished being the good one. And I always saw her as having the problem. Well, my sister's in program. She's is abstinent. She's lost like 130 pounds. She's been in program for a long, long time. And because she grew up heavier, in her mind, she sees herself as heavy. So even though she's lost weight, when she looks in the mirror, she sees a heavier person. Since I was always thin, I have a thin head. And so when I look in the mirror and I say, well, who is that person that I'm looking at? Because that can't be me. So for many years, I was normal. And I'm not a binger, I'm more of a grazer, which has sort of allowed me to be more in denial, because it's not like I'm sitting with boxes or bags or whatever. You know, I'll take a little something here, a little something there, or whatever, and it's not like, eventually if you add it all up, it's a quantity, but it's not like this massive quantity. So that's the way that I sort of have been in denial. And I'm married to a normal person, which is hard at times because he can like take like one of something or two of something and whatever and not really have any cravings or anything. And for a long time I was very angry at him because of that, because I thought it would be fun if he was like a real foodie and loved to eat. And now I'm like grateful that, like, thank God he's not. Because, boy, would I be in trouble. So, I still struggle with things, but, because I would like to be normal, but, I don't think it's going to happen.
Hi, I'm Beth Ann. I'm a compulsive comer. Hi, Beth. One situation that happened for me that really brought home this idea that I'm not the same as other people. When I first gave up sugar products and confection products, I very literally did it one day at a time. And I was doing really pretty well. And then the holidays approached, you know, and then it's like, well, it's going to be Thanksgiving. So thank God, because I was abstinent, I had to, like, be honest with myself and hear, like, my honest thoughts in my own head. And, you know, because I toyed with the idea of, well, I could have one measured portion of this, you know, particular round item that, you know, traditionally is there on Thanksgiving. And when I really was honest with myself, I knew that, you know, I had to ask myself, like, all right, how many of those pieces of that have you had in your lifetime? You know, 1,000, 1,000,000, you know, what is one more going to do for you? You know, and I just, you know, knew that there was really no good reason and that I was just trying to make an excuse to have. And of course, Thanksgiving is followed by Christmas, it's followed by New Year's Eve. So I knew it was like a slippery slope. So I committed to not having it. And so I get to my sister's house where she hosts the holiday, and my father's always in charge of bringing all these round things. So I hear him come in the door, and I hear my sister, you know, go over to him, and she's like, why'd you burn it? And I'm cracking up, because I just knew that to me is my higher power. My higher power has a sense of humor, that, you know, that was like my higher power saying, see, I told you I'd take care of you if you just did the right thing, you know? And I was so grateful, because I know, without a doubt, if I had told myself that I was allowed to have a measured portion of this thing and it came in burnt, I would eat the burnt piece, then I would go to the store and buy a whole one because the world owed me a good piece of that thing. And then I would eat the one good piece of that thing, and then the next day I'd eat another piece of that thing, and then and every night until it was gone, if it lasted that long. And that just, you know, really proved to me that I'm not a normal eater or a normal person. And thank God. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Brenda, compulsive reader. I shared earlier in a workshop that growing up, my folks didn't put a lot of stress on the outside, but that you should look to the inside for the quality of the character of the person.
So.
I didn't look on the outside for myself forever. You know, it's like, and, you know, it took coming into the room for me to be able to do that. Where it's been a, you know, a struggle is that, you know, even though I got acne, you know, relatively quickly, I didn't hold on to that because, in the back of my head, I just really just kept thinking that I wasn't normal, that what the way I grew up was really true. On the outside, it doesn't really matter, and so what? I could just have just one, or so what? That it's a sugar-free this or that, or that, or the things that some plans that other family members are trying, where they could do these point things, and maybe I could try some of those. And, you know, it never ever panned out, and it just didn't really work. So did it have to be smashed? Yeah, I really just had to be dragged through the mud to get it, you know. And, you know, today I am just extremely grateful for being broken that much, you know, to the point that, you know, I was just willing to try something different. So just by, you know, letting go of the flower week, so. You know, it brings me to a place where, you know, I can see past the delusion now, you know, and it's like, it is what it is, you know, and so that's who I am, and it's okay, you know, so I'm really grateful, to be dragged. I'm really grateful to be dragged, actually. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Thank you, Shirley. I'm done. I'm compulsive overeater. I was never like other people because even as a kid, I was 200 pounds, so I wasn't like them. And so I grew up, you know, with that less than and everybody was better than me attitude, and it followed into my adulthood. Even when I had lost the weight, I still have to catch myself because I still think people know more than I do. People are better than I am. Oh, I missed that class, you know, like, why don't I know this? And then I'll get to know them and I realize that they don't know more than me. But that's always my first thought, is that they're better than me. I know I'm not normal with food. You know, when people can leave things or, you know, and I obsess about them. They don't, but I obsess about it. Or when I go to the movies and, you know, I lose consciousness as to what the actors are saying because I'm more aware of what's on the dinner table, you know, and what they're eating. You know, I don't, you know, I lost a lot of my college years because, you know, I had great courses in college because I was an English lit major, and, you know, the Shakespeare and the English lit, and I don't even remember that I took those courses. And when someone asks me about a certain story, it's like, I don't know anything about them because I zoned out. I was eating my brains out. So I missed out on, and that's not normal. You pay for all this money to take these courses and, you know, you zone out during the classes. That's not normal. I will never be normal with food. I don't try to be normal with food anymore because I know it's an impossibility. I don't care what other people are eating. At this point, if somebody leaves something on their desk and it's there all afternoon, yeah, that bothers me. But a lot of times, I'm just so happy to have my abstinent meal, and I love my abstinent food, that I'm just so grateful for it. And I know if I were to pick up, I wouldn't give my abstinent food a nod. Not a nod, because I'd go straight to the sugar. Whether I wanted to eat it or not, it would be going in my mouth because I couldn't stop. So I know I'm not.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. I'm not really not sure how I feel about this. And so I don't know whether to pass or to just sort of ramble for 3 minutes.
Where shall I ramble?
Let me get my inhaler.
All right.
First, I thought about the fact that
that it's not my illusions about being like normal people that have to be smashed. It's those normal people. Now, why is that entertaining? In that they think I'm normal. They think that I can have just a taste. Or, what do you mean you can't have this little something or other with a cup of tea at the end of the day? Well, no, I can't, really. But Grandma, it's Thanksgiving. You have to make all these foods that we all love, and you have to eat them with us. It's not enough that you just make them. That's, all these folks are so unaccepting, it seems to me, of my differences. I think that's where I started with this. But I did spend an awful lot of my life just totally not paying attention to how different I was from other people. And I actually think there was a divine intervention 5 years ago when I had the ski accident that many of you know about. And I do believe, in retrospect, it was God trying to get my attention, because he couldn't seem to reach me any other way. He had given me a lot of chances over the years to realize how insane I was and how different I was from normal people. And he finally just shrugged. I think you know the joke about the woman came upon the farmer beating his mule with a 2x4 when he tried to plow a field, and she jumped out of her car and said to him, I'm reporting you, you're abusing that animal. And he said, no, I'm not, lady, I'm just trying to get his attention. Now, how come you all laughed earlier and I didn't understand it and now you're not laughing?
All right. I'm Eileen, and I'm a compulsive overeating bobblehead. You know, the trouble of sitting this far around the Sherwoods, what can I add? You know, yes, that's me. Yes, that's me. Yes, that's me. But I'm sitting here. You know, I know I've got it finally that I'm not normal. If I fail to maintain a fit spiritual condition, if I don't let God be the one who's running my show, I will be into sugar and white flour and off the wall, and it will kill me. But interestingly enough, I am also starting to realize that sugar and white flour isn't good for anybody. Mm-hmm. That, you know, scientists are now thinking that the implication of sugar is so strong in Alzheimer's that they're referring to it as stage 3 diabetes. You know, and so-called normal people don't seem to be aware of that. And when I am out dining and things are offered to me, I say, I don't do sugar and white flour. And then I pause and I say, and I don't do strychnine and arsenic. You know, because thank God I have discovered that because of this special disease that I have, I'm aware that this is destructive to me. I might not have been. But I see how off the wall I get. I see how angry and unhappy I get when I'm being led by my disease. And so I'm relieved of things that other people are eventually perhaps going to be suffering from because they don't know about this, and I'm grateful to God.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Ziggy, a great recovering compulsive overeater.
Thank you.
Well, I didn't feel normal for a long, long time. You know, as an immigrant coming over to the West here, I didn't speak English, and there was just a lot of like, ha, 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 ha. So I wanted to be normal for a long, long, long time. And I got more centered and more clear and confident who I was as I grew older. But I still remember when I was 4 years old, stealing Easter sweets from my sister because I was upset. It took me decades to realize I had a disease. can't handle sugar, can't handle white flour, nor wheat. I can't do the wheat thing. It took me a long time to accept, but now I do accept. So there's freedom there. There's freedom now. And the more I trust my higher power, the more I realize it's okay to be different. I was scared to be different for a long time. But even at my school, there's only two of us who teach ESL, you know. I mean, that's different right there, you know. I'm mature. As a mature teacher, most of you in my school are in the 20s and 30s. So it's like, as long as I trust my higher power, as long as I'm spiritually fit, then I can accept whatever comes, whatever, you know, whatever I'm supposed to do. And always definitely part of being different. And I embrace that. I accept that now. Thank God I found you all. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Barbara, compulsive overeater. The title of this workshop comes from more about alcoholism. I'm just going to read the paragraph. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real compulsive overeaters. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it's not surprising that our eating careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could eat like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, we will control and enjoy our eating is the great obsession of every abnormal eater. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were compulsive overeaters. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. I always thought it was like everybody else, just lack some willpower. But, you know, thinking about pre-program and like and even now some of the differences, like bodily, my daughter, my grandchildren, and I will go to McDonald's, and I'll get like, you know, my abstinent meal, and they'll get their stuff, and they'll take a couple of bites of one thing, a few of the other things, a couple of sips of this, and they're done. My daughter takes the wrapper, and she goes like this and throws it in the garbage. I'm not a normal eater. The idea of ever throwing food out goes against every grain of my thinking. But what I want to talk about is like the delusion that I'm like other people mentally is really big for me. Because like first thing is I can't trust my brain. When I'm in the food, can't think straight, can't make any good decisions. I can't make any decisions about weight loss and stick to it. I will eat spoiled, outdated, full on the floor food. My daughter thinks that's the most disgusting thing in the world. She's a normal eater. My daughter, if we go like on a cruise or something and she gains 2 pounds, she comes home, she'll adjust her eating to lose and she doesn't go crazy over it. Me, if I gain 2 pounds, which is to 5 to 10 to 20 to 50, whatever, I go and buy pants that have bigger elastic or I buy maternity clothes to hide it. The biggest thing though that for me is that I'm not like other people. I can't afford the luxury of being angry. Because, you know, somebody else who's a normal eater, they get angry, they scream, they throw things, they don't talk to their spouse or whoever for like a couple of days, and they're over it. Me, when I get angry, I carry it forever, and then I have to run to the food for comfort. And for me, that's the biggest delusion that I have to, that I can't afford the luxury of putting food in my mouth that I'm allergic to. I can't afford to be angry, and I can't ever to think that I have this lift and that I'm the one doing it, or that I'm cured. Because while I'm recovered, I'm still a compulsive over, and I always will have that allergy. And if I allow it, I will always develop that obsession of the mind. Thanks.
I'm Dora, a grateful recovering compulsive overeater. I'm Dora. And I actually did a lot of studying on how compulsive overeaters' minds are actually, my mind is different. My mind gives me different signals, just like it says in the literature. I know that my husband will leave things in the toaster oven and totally forget about them, and I know that I can remember sitting, going out to dinner with my husband and my son, and I was sitting between them. They both sat there with these end-of-meal items on their plates, and they had taken a few bites, and they were just sitting there. And they were talking to each other. They didn't even were aware that these things were there. And that's all I could think about. I don't know what they were talking about, but I was thinking, I can't believe this. I can't believe it. I'm not going to look at that. I'm not going to look at that. I'm not going to look at that. You know, I was just, and that's my brain different from their brain. It is different. I know that when I have finished my meal, I want more. And that doesn't happen to somebody else that has it's a normie. The normies will push it away. I remember my mother used to do it. She used to go with a plate, you know, like this. I don't have that thought. My mind sends me signals that say more would be better. I need more. And when I have the time that it's most evident to me is when I have anxiety about a project that I have to do. And an example is I have to prepare for a student that's studying something, because I'm a math tutor, studying something that's, I've got to review it, to work with them, because I haven't, they're doing some chapter on something that I haven't seen for 50 years, you know. So I go, and it is like impossible for me to sit there and work without doing something like this. It's really, really hard. I have to set the timer. I have to set the timer for 15 minutes to see if I can do it, if I can study for 15 minutes, and then go back and set it again for another 15 minutes. And it's just amazingly hard. And that's, if I get sugar or white flour in my system, it is, I would have to say, impossible for me to do alone to get that out of my system to stop the cravings, because physically those cravings are very real. They've studied, you know, there have been studies of the mind and how those cravings are very, very, very real. And that other people don't feel that craving, so they don't know, you know, it's not that jerk eggs that I have this disease. That's what happens in my mind. That's what my body tells me. You have to have that, and nothing is as important as that. And I will do whatever I have to get that. And so I have to keep that stuff out of my system, or that's how I will behave. I'm not that kind of normal. I'm this kind of normal. Thank you.
I'm looking at the title of this workshop, and I realized that I have to just be, it wasn't until the end, I'll be honest with myself, that I always thought I could handle food. And at times I can. When I'm not restless, irritable, discontent. When I am restless, irritable, discontent, that's when I can handle it. And I've always had to go on a diet and lose the weight, but I never maintain it because they come up in my head and be restless, irritable, discontent. And how do I cope with it? I cope with it by eating. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to cope with this. I personally don't think anyone is quote unquote normal. That's why we have Alcoholics Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. Everybody's got issues with how they cope with things. I'm so grateful that this is the way I cope, and I found an answer to the problem that I have with this coping mechanism. Like someone said last night, my cover is broken. I've learned how to cope and deal with my addiction and the subject of my higher power for the food, because that's where I'm getting the power from. Power is not mine. I'm not having power past that point. But my higher power is giving me, not power, but the insight on how to deal with it.
Thanks for my hand. Hi, I'm Ann, compulsive overeater.
Hi,
Ann. I always knew that I was a little different than everybody, but I never knew what it was. I couldn't. I knew that I was a perfectionist. I knew that if I did something all the way, or not at all. I didn't even try. And dieting, if I ate the slightest item that wasn't on the diet, party that day. It was all over. And it took me a while to get back on the diet again. And when at my last job when I worked, if we ever had a party at work and there were some items in the freezer, and I thought no one even noticed. But I went back and got a large thing four times. And this one girl was watching me, and she said, didn't you just eat that like a half hour ago? And she knew what it must have melted. And four times she said, oh my God. And I actually felt like embarrassed that it's like someone saw me. I thought that I, like, no one would even notice. And then another time we had a party and I was by a credenza and you heard the rappers and my sales assistant said, Ann, get away from the table. She just heard them and she wasn't even sitting there. She knew it was me. So it took me a while and my therapist said to me, you know, why don't you go to OA? And I said, oh, that isn't for me. And until it was a little over a year ago when I was sitting there and I thought, oh my gosh, this is really getting worse. And I saw what I had just eaten and I thought, this is definitely, I can't lie to myself anymore. And I looked and I found these rooms and I'm actually so grateful that I found these rooms and that I have this problem because even if I'd gotten thin or if I didn't have this problem, I can't imagine ever being happier than I am today because of this program. So that's it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. Well, thanks for letting me be your leader. I'd like to end with a serenity prayer and